Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Of course, it's Monday, it's Lockdown Monday, and we have Edwin with us once again. Hi, Edwin.
Hello, Martin. And we also have Christmas in July, don't we? Everybody's forgotten about it.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Too much doom and gloom, Martin. Too much doom and gloom. What's going on?
It's certainly a bit like that at the moment. But, you know, Christmas in July, it'll be getting warmer soon. Summer's coming. Whoopee.
Yeah, and the virus will be with us forever. And lockdowns will continue on forever and ever and ever.
Yep. It's like a Groundhog Day, right? So you go back and start again and go back and start again and go back and start again. Mind you, I had another movie in mind. Do you remember Crocodile Dundee in New York with the knife? You know, yes. when he basically says, you know, you think that's a knife. This is a knife, right? Well, I will say the same about lockdowns, right? So if you compare the lockdown in Sydney with the lockdown in Melbourne, you think that's a lockdown? Look at Melbourne. That's a lockdown.
Look, exactly. And wait until we, as I keep on saying, wait until we get the labneh and the merengue and the Tijuana and the enchilada virus from Latin America. They're going to be vicious. And only God knows how long we'll be locked down for then.
Well, that's also true. Yeah, there's a few more coming. But talking about lockdown, you know, you were dealing with a possum. Well, at least you weren't dealing with a possum because you're not allowed to deal with a possum, right?
Oh, that little bastard. You know, you put a complaint on the council. I was lodging my DA for the high-rise development. I mean, I sort of wanted to go. Told the council it was rebuilding the chook house, but what I was really doing going up private certification for a high-rise development. I was going to get Icon to build it. I was already negotiating a price and everything, and the little bastard lodged that complaint. I can't get him out of there.
You're a possum whisperer. That's what you need.
Look, I think I need. I think you'll take a few carrots in a brown paper bag. I'm sort of going, you know, that way inclined.
Yeah, that's right. Enough bribery and corruption to sink a battleship or shift a possum. We'll see. Now you've got a correction to make, haven't you?
Last week I gave you the wrong screenshot. With regards to the numbers, what we were talking about was the vast difference in numbers in for sale, that is for, you know, homes for sale in the Sydney region in compared to, you know, when we compare weekly numbers from 2020 and 2021. So I guess what I've got today are the this week's numbers in terms of 2021 figures and last year's numbers around the same week, you know, week 28, week 29, which and at that time last year, as you can see from the post, we were actually witnessing for sale listing numbers were going up, you know, relatively they were steady, but they were moving, they were trending upwards, and now they're trending downwards.
Yeah, and of course the other question is, given the lockdowns that are now happening, I haven't seen any specific instructions with regards to whether property can be sold or not and whether open homes can be not. I understand that you can't have lots of people through, but you can still give private views. Is that right?
That's correct. You can inspect a property by appointment. But this is become a little bit farcical, Martin, because it's problematic, particularly homes that are very popular. When you're trying to get an appointment, you can't get one. When you're trying to view the property, you know, the agents aren't available. A lot of agencies and a lot of the younger agents aren't used to doing inspections by appointment. They're just used to doing inspections via the open house style, on open the house on a Wednesday or open the house on a given day of the week for half an hour, and on the Saturday for half an hour, and get yourself ready and prepared for the auction. And of course at that time you could get 10, 15, 20 groups through a property, and they didn't really do a lot. But now that they have to organize themselves as well as schedule times. I've been finding it very difficult in the last week or so to get access to properties, particularly when you want to inspect a property, not the way that a lot of people inspect properties, and that just, you know, looking at the new shiny glossy tiles or glossy bench tops, and you know, the, you know, smell the freshly painted rooms and so forth. But you know, when you want to look at a property in detail, it's very hard to do so. And as well, in theory, you can't even organize you know, a trade, so therefore technically you can't even organize building and pest inspections, from what some of my colleagues in that industry are telling me, that they're sitting at home twiddling their thumbs.
Yeah, well, it's certainly going to put a further dampener on things in the short term. Of course, the question is, how much more money will the government throw at this, right? How much lower will interest rates go to try and encourage more people to borrow? You know, all of those questions are still up in the air, I guess. But in the short term, it's certainly quite concerning. But here's another question that I had from someone the other day who was saying, look, you don't talk much about the neighbours. And I would have thought, he said, the neighbours are pretty important. So how do you know the context of the place you're buying? How do you do the research on the neighbours? Oh, that was a really interesting question.
Well, the only thing that you can do is obviously you stalk the place at different times of the day and different days of the week. I shouldn't use the word stalk, but you know, you do your drive-bys. No different to what you do a drive-by through you know, apartment buildings, or and you drive around the neighborhood. There are a lot of websites that give you some good information on LGAs, and you know, down specific to suburbs, and you're providing a service yourself with regard to what's happening, you know, on a micro scale view, you know, very detailed optics on what's going on in certain areas, certain streets, certain suburbs, and I think that product that you provide, that tool that people can use, utilize and take advantage of, I'm sure you're going to, you know, expand on that. You know, there are other websites that capture the crime rate, also capture the demographics, also, you know, capture a lot of other interesting features, you know, schools, the grading of schools. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can put together. So yeah, look, I think what you've got is certainly up there amongst the top you know, top three sites that you can access. Obviously, paid sites will give you a little bit more info than others, but it's worthwhile information to have, Martin.
Well, thanks. Yes, and I do have quite a queue of people wanting the one-on-one service, particularly now with so many variables there, and I, you know, pull information from all sorts of areas. But I think you hit the nail on the head, which is visit at different times of the day and then the evening, right? And just walk around a bit and get a bit of a sense of the suburb. You know, for example, is there somebody who always on a Saturday evening always plays live music? So one of the things I would suggest is you drive down the road on a Saturday evening and just see whether there's a lot of that going on, for example, right? Another one is to look to see what commercial operations there are in the local area. And if there are commercial operations in the local area, it's worth making sure that you're there during the week, during the commercial operating time, not just at the weekends. It's quite amazing how many people visit property over the weekend, right? And assume it's like that all the time. So, you know, there are things you have to do.
Yeah, look, and that's part of the due diligence that you're meant to be doing anyway. But unfortunately, a lot of people are short of time and can't get around to look at various properties and do the same on multiple properties. But I guess nowadays, when you're spending well and truly, when the median is over the 1.2 and the average is, you know, close to the 1.3 in Sydney, it's worthwhile doing that type of you know, due diligence, I would think. But also more to the more as you and I have discussed over and over again, and as early as last week, the importance of the building and pest reports and how critical they are. And with these current lockdowns and the, you know, and the restrictions that are placed on tradespeople, I mean, it's only a matter of, you know, you know, it's only a question to see what's going to happen moving forward. How's it all going to pan out? But then again, Flip Flop Gladys is going to, my understanding is that she's going to flip and flop over this, and we may get back, the construction industry may get back to normal and could possibly be within a week.
Yeah, well, there's certainly some heavy pressure being applied by the construction sector, who've been grizzling like you wouldn't believe immediately. And, you know, the headlines all over the place. In fact, you know, one of the articles we'll discuss is in the AFR when they're talking about the cash flow crunch within, 2 weeks in New South Wales?
Yeah, look, when I read that article, I know some of my my builder colleagues and people that are building, that are involved with high rise as well as medium density and duplexes in single dwellings or just doing renovations. I know that they're always talking about being, cash is tight and they've got to pay in advance and they've got to get materials and so forth. But to have some of these larger corporations or larger builders and organizations say that they're 2 weeks away, literally, from devastation, and that they struggle on the 3 week holiday at the end of the year. I thought that's crazy shit. That's really cutting things to the bone. But then again, Martin, when you understand the nature of the developers that are predominantly in that space, in the high rise development, it's a lot of the cash flow, the money that they're bringing in on the progress payments as they're building and as they're taking on the they're doing the drawdowns. Obviously, not only are they splurging it on themselves and on their families, but also they're looking at other sites to put options on to acquire down the future. So they are playing with money. But I didn't think it was as bad as they make it out, as bad as 2 weeks.
Well, it's interesting. Again, my surveys of smaller builders, right, in my SME surveys, highlight that a number of them have significant cash flow pressures at the moment, and that's partly to do with the extended development time, so it's taking longer to build, so they're not getting paid as quickly, the cost of materials. But, of course, the old tax man always wants his take, right? And the number one and number two issues that I see coming through from the surveys is GST payments and then tax payments. So there's something there, I think, which suggests that the cash flow mechanisms of many of these types of construction businesses are really tight at the moment. And the banks aren't actually very willing to lend, right? So whereas previously they were much more willing to throw some liquidity in and just, allow them to rack up the overdraft, less so now. So it is financially quite stretched. And, any unexpected event, such as a lockdown, or not being able to go for work for a period of time, is sufficient to be able to create huge, huge financial pressures, and it again cascades and builds up very quickly.
That's correct. And this is where a lot of our listeners need to pay very close attention to. Not only what they say in the articles or what they say in the news or what you hear in general, but also pay close attention to what they're not saying. And what they're not saying is that, how many of these poor bastards are in liquidation or will go into liquidation and will potentially go into receivership, and therefore you're not going to be covered by way of any rectification work down the future, if particularly both the building company and the developing company are going to liquidation. So this is a time more of a reason why you've got to be, buyers beware of who's built the product. If you're buying something off the plan, something new, whether it be a villa, townhouse, or apartment, or a freestanding home for that matter. I mean, if it's only going to take a hiccup of 2 weeks to send shivers down the spine of many of these big builders, well then don't just think of the high rise. Also think of the builders that are building in all those subdivisions and have sold the house and land packages.
No, that's right. And it's interesting, again, in my one-on-one conversations, the people who are engaged with the builders, one of the questions that I ask is, what due diligence did you do about the builder? Did you check the financial status of the builder, for example? Have you looked at some of the other work that they've done? Have they completed it to a reasonably high standard? All of those things. And it amazes me that so often people say, oh, I didn't think about that.
No, and this is also where you've got to be careful as to what your conveyancing solicitor or conveyancer does, with even with the freestanding homes that are being built, and the secondary style dwellings, or the ones that have been built for quite a number of years, and look at the additions, the extensions, or anything that would require a council approval. Have they been done in accordance to the regulations and the standards and the council requirements? Because it only takes your neighbour to dob you in. Now, the agents in the past have said to myself and to a number of my my personal clients, where where the agents have told us when we've done the inspections, they've said, "Oh, it's okay. You know, it's been up for over 5 years. She'll be right." Well, it may be okay, it may be fine to you, and maybe they may have no issue. But then, if your neighbour complains, all it takes is a neighbour to complain, and then you can be in all sorts of trouble. I know of a couple now that have been struggling to rectify something, in addition to a balcony that they did in a property in the mountains. Now, that rectification, like they overextended the balcony to the rear. They overextended it by I think it was 200 or 300 millimeters, 30 centimeters, and the neighbor dobbed them in, Martin. It's taken them so far close to 6 months to get the permit through, to be able to get the after they've made the adjustments, to get the DA application sealed in order to sell the house. Now from one point of view, the neighbor's done them an injustice to an extent, but more so it's worked in their favor, because now the property has gone up in value over the last 6 months, conservatively $80,000. So they're benefiting one way, but it's been painful for the poor for this couple, because they've had to do the work themselves. The business has been in Katoomba opening and shutting, and very few people going through it as it is. So they've been struggling, but there is a positive side to that story.
Yeah, and I think it really just highlight the point. Really just highlight the point about thinking this through and thinking through what are the things that could go wrong and how do you deal with them, right? Because actually being wise after the event doesn't help. You need to actually be thinking ahead, which is one of the things I keep saying to people.
Yeah, look, that's correct, and that's why all the due diligence that you do, and you get your buyer's agency or your agent or whoever, it's got to be spot on, because they may have had no complaints for the last 10 years, 12 years, but it only takes you to upset your neighbour, and then you can be in all sorts of trouble, and you could be knocking down entire sunrooms and entire additions to the property that you paid good money for. So things aren't getting cheap, with all the disruptions in the supply chains, word on the street is that things are getting materials getting more and more expensive. Kitchen manufacturers, three kitchen manufacturers that we spoke to, they all have this same problem, and that is they've got the panels done, they've got kitchens ready to go, but they can't get hinges. Of all things, they can't get hinges. Now, they don't want to put in the cheap Bunnings hinges on, obviously, because the product is above par, but they've got to wait in the sourcing hinges just to... So these are the components that we don't manufacture here anymore, Martin, and that are on either on containers on the way out or containers stuck in ports overseas. It's really a mess. Now, further to that, a number of builders and their families that are also their extended families that are also in the building industry have been telling us that they're also employing guards in order to guard the sites from 6 p.m. in the afternoon to 6 a.m. the following morning, because materials are getting pinched. We're going back to the early 2000s when this thing happened again, when sites were being broken into by other builders and other developers that couldn't get materials or couldn't afford to buy materials. In this case, it's not so much that they can't afford them, it's that they can't get them. And I dare say they'll probably go in there and take the vanity or take the some of the cabling and timber, and I wouldn't be surprised if they leave a few hundred dollars behind in an envelope to say thanks.
Well, I'll tell you, it was an interesting thing here. There was we got some building going on not far away, right? And this really big lorry turned up the other week with a load of wood. And I was thinking, cool, I bet that's worth more than it normally is.
That's worth more than the lorry itself, Martin.
Yeah, I think it probably was, actually. Yeah, it was
quite, look, some of the, there was some, one building company, it's only a small builder. They, one of his, it's a relative of one of the builders that we work with. And he said that, so it's a cousin, and his other cousin, the brother of this builder, his full-time job is to go around as many Bunnings stores and as many timber yards as possible and just buy timber. That's his, that's become his full-time job.
Yep.
So that they can complete the work that they've contracted to do.
Yep, absolutely. It's more expensive relative to gold. It's hilarious, isn't it? Now, let's talk about granny flats, because there's some really weird stuff going on, you know. Granny flats ain't as simple as you thought it might be.
Admittedly, granny flats, I wasn't a fan of granny flats in pre-pandemic. I've got to make a confession, man. I wasn't a fan of granny flats, and mainly because the granny flats that I saw that were being built in Sydney's West were really just ad hoc type of secondary dwellings, and I was really pissed off with the way that they were marketed and the way that they, because 16, 17 and 18, it was very hard to get to get accommodation and to get relatively affordable accommodation in lots of parts of the West. So a lot of people started converting their garages and so forth into granny flats. And what I saw was absolutely shocking. So that gave me a distaste for granny flats. But now, I could say post pandemic, of a more acceptable of granny flats. But of course, in LGAs where you've got decent space for a granny flat, particularly in areas where you've got 700 square meters and upwards of 700 square meters, you can put a decent granny flat in. But there are some LGAs that you can put a granny flat in properties that have only got 450 square meters, and I think that's getting tight and it's getting very very skinny, as they say, when it comes to lifestyle Once again, going into that lifestyle of living on top of each other and having issues with, because you're in such close proximity. But definitely in LGAs where you've got 700 square meters and upwards, I kind of think that's the way, that's the future, because again, it's a demographic change in the shift from strata living to open space. And people are going to be more okay with that as we move forward, is my opinion.
An interesting question, of course, there with granny flats is that potentially you can let it out, right, as an investment property.
Well, that's correct. You can. You just got to be careful, obviously, how you draw your how you do your taxes and all the taxable implications that have. In this particular article that we're looking at from our REA, the buyer's agent that they interview, he's totally against building a granny flat if it's just purely for investment purposes. And I think he's missed the point on that. He makes other good points, but he's missed the point on that. When you do the numbers and you factor in the cost and to get a good granny flat built, you're looking anywhere between $150,000 to $175,000, and that's built right. I have seen granny flats that are built a lot cheaper, but it's always one of those things that you've got to be careful and see what it is that you're buying or that you're putting in your backyard, whether you are buying a lemon, as they say, or buying yourself more issues. But the ones that obviously we source, or the companies that we source to build granny flats for our clients in the property acquisitions, have been making sure that they the water separately metered, the electricity separately metered, so they can basically, you're independent. Each household or each dwelling is independent of one another. But for me, when I say that the buyer's agent that they interviewed in this article missed the point on from the investment point of view is because I think he's missed the point on the fact of the demographic change. If you've got a granny flat, if you've got a block, you know, upwards of 600, 650 square meters, you can, you know, you can partition the land up relatively well to so that you're not on top of each other and you can have that space and you can have that tranquility, Martin. Whereas obviously if you're in that, like I said, in some LGAs where the blocks only need to be as big as 450 square meters, it's a little bit tight. But then again, you only have to look at what he's selling to the greater community, and that's new property. And obviously, you know, that's taking food away from his plate, as they say, you know, food away from the table, his table. So obviously he's going to say it's not a good thing. It's just for purely an investment.
Yeah, that's always think about the motivation. I make one final point about granny flats, and that is that sometimes, you know, somebody might have erected a granny flat without the right permits and permissions, right? And then they put the whole thing on the market. So it's always worth checking to make sure that the building approvals and permits are there if there's that type of property on the plot.
Oh, definitely. Any extension or extra dwelling to the existing dwelling that's on the deposit plan that's issued in the contract should always be and carefully looked at. But also, not only that, as we spoke earlier, Martin, it's extensions to homes where they've extended the sunroom and or what was a veranda and they converted into a sunroom and have enclosed it and pushed the the floor out a bit more and put in a flat roof or added on another a different type of roof. So you can generally get an idea as to the extensions or what people have done over the years and how old those extensions are to warrant chasing certifications and the relevant data or information and documents in order for you not to have any issues in the future. But if post-purchase, obviously, then you have to make the right applications and get the right certifications in order to either be told by the council to knock those dwellings down or make the right application and some rectification work in order to get them done. The add-ons or ad hoc, a lot of the add-ons and ad hoc granny flats that I've seen that have been attached to dwellings in the past have missed on one very, very important thing, and that is in the common wall that they have with the main buildings, is that they're not fireproof, and the fire rating is very, very low. So effectively, there's no the common wall there is it just becomes so. Obviously, if there's a fire in one section of the house, the whole dwelling is going to go up, and you can have all sorts of issues. So yeah, you got to be very, very careful with when it comes to extra dwellings on properties.
Yeah, and in fact, just give you a thumbnail on that one. I was talking to somebody in my one-on-one series the other week, and this particular purchaser had bought a property with a sort of a granny flat extension, right, and went through and purchased it. It's about 2 years ago, I think. And then they tried to apply for some additional work in the main building, and that got the council interested, and the council said that's an unapproved extension. And after a lot of shenanigans, they're basically saying you've got to take it down because it's not approved.
That's right. And depending on what councillor you get, depending on the planner on the roster on the day, what mood they're in, what side of the bed they got off onto, and whether or not they trot on the cat early in the morning or not, or all those things come into play, and that's why you've got to be extra careful. You got to make sure you get a good conveyancing solicitor or a conveyancer that's going to vet the contract, and you tell the conveyancer and the conveyancing solicitor that if you suspect any add-ons to an existing dwelling, tell them about it, because a lot of them don't pick a lot of these things up on the searches.
No, well, in this case, they used a cheap conveyancer just to do the minimum, right? And there was nothing immediately obvious in terms of any title issues relating to it. So, they're all saying it's not my problem. But unfortunately, the guy who's got the property has now got the problem of taking it down and essentially making good before they can even start putting another application in. So, you know, there's a lot of cost, frustration, time and effort. And there isn't really a, you know, anybody to go to other than to say, yeah, I made a mistake.
Yeah, look, I've got thoughts on that, as you know, and that's why I say get everything in writing. I'm not a lawyer, and this isn't legal advice, but I'd go back to my notes and see what the agent, how the agent spruiked the property, and what the agent said on the day, and you know, whether they put it in writing or whether it was said verbally. But if it's clear, and you know, I'd pursue that avenue well and truly, because agents are meant to know what they're what they're selling as well, and they're meant to know what is approved, what isn't approved, and if they don't disclose material fact, and that is a material fact, then that can be in a world of poo, as they say. So but again, it is time consuming, it is costly, and frustrating, you know, on and on, but it all comes back to doing the due diligence from the start.
And what I said was, because again, not specific advice, but you know, you might want to think about, did the agent know? Or the other question is, should the agent have known, right? Because actually that's a really important question, because in fact, the agent probably should have known even if they didn't declare it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, Martin, is I kind of tend to believe that 99% of the time agents do know, but they just plead ignorance. But unfortunately, ignorance isn't a defense.
Yeah.
And that's why the regulators are trying to toughen and tighten a lot of these regulations. But the hamstrung, as you and I know, and they're understaffed, or they're running on the smell of an oily rag with regards to the budget, and you know, with what we expect them to do. That's the unfortunate way things are, and it is what it is, and there's never not enough due diligence that you can do on a property purchase, particularly with the prices that people are paying now for simple homes.
Yeah, and folks, get it in writing, keep the records. You never know when it comes good. All right, now before we go, let's talk about WeChat chat chat chatting chat.
Yeah, the WeChat chatterers are the scanning of the WeChat groups have been the local chatterers, and the people that are here in residents, Chinese residents here in Australia that use WeChat and converse through it and have groups here. And the general chatter is, amongst all the groups, is still don't get sucked into buying apartments, regardless of how cheap they may seem. And if you can't afford to buy a house now at the property in the areas where you would have liked to have bought, if you missed out because the freestanding homes have gone beyond your reach, start looking into the next tier or the next level, which is villas and townhouses. So that's the focus. That's been the chatter on the platforms here, on the property investment WeChat groups here in Sydney of late. There's going to be a lot more focus on townhouses and on the villas. In other words, the medium density developments.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can help me with a question which I was asked the other day by, again, somebody in my one-to-one. What's the difference between a townhouse and a villa, right? I said, it's just a label. It's the same. But am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, look, you are, because the thing is, some would say now that that the difference is a villa still stands alone in a small strata complex. Stands separate, and townhouses generally have common walls, share common walls with other townhouses. That's how some people play differentiate between the two. Others would say townhouses are typically two-story, and the villas are generally the single level dwellings in a medium density complex as well. So it's just, yeah, it's another dwelling in a strata complex, and typically stands alone. It doesn't have adjoining walls. But then again, I've come across villas, that were built in the early to mid 80s, that had a common wall. Yeah, two villas had a common wall between the two. But yeah, so it's you're not wrong. I guess is the answer to that, because in general that's how you differentiate between a villa and a townhouse. When you see the single level dwelling that's sitting alone there, and then you've got all the adjoining dwellings alongside it. That's how they call them townhouses.
Well, I've got this theory that a villa sounds slightly more upmarket than a townhouse.
Well, look, in the pecking order of things, Martin, right? So when you look at the pecking order, you say, okay, if you can't afford to buy a freestanding home, you go and you buy a duplex. But if you can't even afford to buy a duplex, then you buy a villa. And if you can't afford to buy a villa, you buy a townhouse. And if you can't afford to buy a townhouse, then you look at an apartment in a three-story walk-up, or a small block, boutique block of 6 or 12, or a three-story walk-up. And if you can't afford that, then obviously you go and do your ass and you buy a high-rise. You buy a high-rise. So that's the pecking order. So you're not wrong, Martin. You're not wrong.
Yeah, and then you can put the chuck house at the bottom, right? Or the top, depending on how you look at it.
No, that's a development site. That's worth a lot more, Martin. And look, it's going to be worth a lot more because it's going to be surrounded by, I went and bought the seeds, Martin, see?
Hey, very good.
I've got the seeds. Yeah, I'm going to try them out, but I've yet to build the beds. That's going to take a little bit more time.
Oh, very good. Oh, yeah. I had a sort of a sinking feeling there, because I thought that might have been frozen vegetables, but no, I think they are seeds, right?
Yeah, look, they're the seeds, but I don't know whether to plant them or smoke them.
Very good. All right, tip of the week, Edwin. Dogs or diamonds?
Dogs or diamonds? Look, the tip of the week. If you look, and this is just pertinent to freestanding homes, right? So, I try to put a tip based on what's happened to us during the week, and or what the inquiry I've had through my direct messaging on Twitter, what people have asked. So, for this week, look, the tip of the week is this: if it's a freestanding home, and a lot of people are sort of passing it by because they consider it to be a dog, just look at it. Sometimes you got to look at this dog, as we refer to a property that you can't make heads or tail of it, and just looks all over the place. And sometimes when you look beyond the what's presented, it could end up being and polished up into a diamond. And particularly if it's a freestanding home, don't overlook at, just look at it from if I can use the analogy, look at it from a different angle. Get a second opinion. Look at what you can, how it can be polished up, what you can do with it. But more so, it'll sit on close to a very busy road. The house will be an odd house, like the one that we acquired for a client on Thursday, and sealed the deal on Friday. And the house sat at the back of the block. And people that the agent had introduced to that property before, they came around and looked at it. They looked for the house first and foremost, and they saw this what looked like a big shed at the back, and that was a house. Now a lot of people couldn't see beyond the first impression, but whereas when we saw it, when we looked at it, and when we made our inquiries, and I said to our buyer, look at it this way. It's a two-bedroom small cottage at the back of the block, but look at all the space that you got at the front, all the buildable space at the front where you could build in future a three-bedroom dwelling and keep the existing dwelling that they built at the back of the block in the early 50s, keep it as the granny flat, and there's a huge upside. So sometimes the what people would consider as the dogs end up being a really good, you know, diamond when it's polished up.
Yeah, it's good advice, Edwin. And, you know, I guess the problem is that sometimes a dog is a dog is a dog is a dog when you can't do anything about it, right? And sometimes a dog is actually a diamond if you look at it the right way. And, you know, as you say, something like the plot's big and therefore there's an opportunity for development. Or it might be superficially rather unkempt, but below it, it's got good bones and good potential, right? And that's why standing back and thinking hard about it is actually worth it rather than just doing the sort of the 1 minute quick inspection and then run on, right? Again, so often people miss opportunities because they don't actually just take that extra pause to stop and think and ask, well, yes, but. And I always think that's a really good thing to do.
Yeah, and this comes back to what I keep on saying over and over again, is always buy with the upside. So after our research, after we looked at it, after just crunching the numbers and seeing what's being sold, you know, doing all of that, look, it ended up being a great opportunity, great potential, and quite frankly, it worked out in my opinion, based on the land size and everything, it worked out that we got the property for our client on land value alone, and got a dwelling, a two bedroom, you know, livable dwelling that could still be rented out for $420, $430 a week, for $25,000. So you can't even build a granny flat for less than $150. And there you go. So once you do all that, so yeah, you just got to try to look at it. And then look, as you said, Martin, sometimes, and no matter which way you look at it, it's just a dog. But it comes back to price, and a lot of the properties I've seen in the inner west or the eastern suburbs, or predominantly, you know, closer to the CBD, you know, where you've got these renovated delights, you know, a lot of them are just simply dogs in a money pit. But you know, outside of those areas, I think there are still some great opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's good that we're talking about dogs on an evening when the cats aren't around, right? So it's okay.
Oh, they're used to it now, Martin. They're used to it. They're little. They don't even consider themselves as cats. They consider themselves as tigers. So, they don't care. As long as they get fed, they get a warm bed, and I keep on making buying them toys, and you know, they're okay. They seem to be comfortable.
Very good. Good to hear. And Edwin, as always, very, very important conversation. Very good advice from you, as always. And I guess we'll do it all again next week.
Yes, we will. And I'm sure there'll be more exciting news, and we'll see what happens moving forward with this, with Flip-Flop Gladys and what she brings out, and what else and who else and what other industry is going to be in lockdown, considered as a first in line to get the vaccine, like they're trying to push the real estate industry into, Martin.
Absolutely. Well, stay safe, and we'll do it again. See you later.
Cheers, Martin.
Bye.